last 20 years, Army medics were taught to the same standard as civilian EMT paramedics. After the blow-up in the sandbox of Iraq and Afghanistan, the U.S. Army Medical Corps relooked on how medics were trained. Their training has prepared you on standards that apply to civilian emergency medical services that do not apply to the combat environment. Does this show actually mean combat? Not totally. Combat environments can be found in horrible natural disasters and, yes, man-made disasters. Between this show and live training, the Medic Shack will show you how to treat and survive most any natural or man-made disaster. So join us Sundays, 5 p.m. Mountain Time on the Just Measures Radio Network.
I'm Cope Reynolds, and I'll be your host for the next 2 hours on The Shooting Bench, where we'll discuss the good, the bad, and the ugly issues that Americans face today. Loss of liberty, violations of our civil rights, Second Amendment issues, and the rape of our precious Constitution in general. Roll up your sleeves. Let's get started right now.
It's easy to take liberty for granted when you've never had it taken from you.
All in favor of losing your rights, please do nothing.
The views expressed in the following broadcast are not necessarily those of Just Measures Radio or the owners or sponsors thereof. Any and all mention of laws, ordinances, or policies are not to be construed as legal advice or necessary. All inclusive. The listener has all responsibility in verifying this information. Be advised that this broadcast is inflammatory to those with thin skin, limp wrists, and room temperature IQs. Furthermore, the statements expressed by the host may contain information known to the state of California to inspire free thinking and may promote unexpected growth of testicles and backbone. Listener discretion is advised.
All right, here we are, live and in living color. Welcome to the Shooting Bench. It's the 12th of September. We made it through another 9/11 without something blowing up. I'm a little surprised something didn't happen yesterday, but I'm glad. You wouldn't believe I come sliding in here just as hard as I could go about 4 minutes ago and got everything set up, hooked up, saddled up, and got on time near just about the time I was supposed to. Might have been running about a minute late. So, anyway, it was tough, but we're going to do a full 2 hours tonight. I've got a special guest going to be on here in a few minutes. Some of you have seen Jim Fleming in the chat room a time or two. Well, he is right here sitting live and in Technicolor, and we're going to talk about a different training thing. We're also going to spend quite a bit of time tonight on militia issues. That would be forming a militia, getting your leadership picked out, and this, that is in the opinion of your host, and your mileage may vary. So we'll see what kind of response we get out of this. I am going to, here in a little bit, I'm going to open up the phone lines. It'll be a little while, but before the night's over, we'll get the phone lines opened up. We are in the midst right now. The reason I'm running almost late tonight, not quite, but almost late, is because we are right in the midst of a three-day personal defense handgun class, of which Jim Fleming is a part of. And hang on just a second here. Let me get this thing running. And there we go. All right, now we should be ready to go here in just a minute. I haven't been able to keep up at all with the news today. I've been out on the range all day, and I'll be out there all day tomorrow, part of tomorrow night, and most of the day Saturday. So you guys are going to have to enlighten me with whatever news has happened since I've been away. But I say been away since I've... Let's hang on just a second. I gotta hate these things. Okay, there we go. Okay. Let me look and see what we've got for real important news that we need to get to here. Like I say, I just come flying indoors, slinging stuff from side to side, getting my computer hooked up, plugged in, and all the little gizmos attached to it that we gotta have. And just got this thing up and running. So give me just a second. Forgive me for being slovenly here. But let's see. Oh, I see what I did wrong. Yeah, this will work better. All right, let's try that. There we go. That brings up my I read something today. It was in this morning before I went to the class. Unbelievable. If you live in Pittsburgh, don't. It's time to move. We've seen similar problems in other towns, not quite to this extent, though. I posted this on Facebook, and for my money, folks, it's past time. Well, we're done. And nobody seems to get it. In Pittsburgh, unbelievable. You can park in your own driveway and get a ticket. As a matter of fact, one family paid $2,400 worth of fines to park in their own driveway. Yeah, can you believe that? In a place, property that they own and are paying taxes on, driveway that belongs to them on within their property line, but if you park on it, you get fined. You actually have to have a what the hell do they call it? A occupation permit. Is that what it was? Occupation? Let me go find that story. An occupation permit for you to park on your own driveway. I think that's what it was. Hang on a minute. Let me look and see. What they did was they passed a law that says that you can't park, that you have to park at least 30 feet away from the street. Well, that would be fine except for the people that already have homes, already have driveways poured, already have garages or family rooms or whatever it is at the end of the driveway. Now, I've seen some places that were, high-end communities here where you have to park in your garage, which I think is absurd. Garages are for junk. They're not for parking. They're for reloading and storing all your junk, piling it to the ceiling. They're not for parking cars. It'd be nice to have a garage where you could pull in the wintertime and change your oil and stuff, but alas, they are made for junk, so you can't do that. But you have to have an occupancy permit to park within 30 feet of the driveway, of the street. They said that tickets and warning letters are being issued already by Bureau of Building Inspection. The Bureau of Building Inspection are the ones that's fine. You have got to be kidding me. No? What? No, I'm not live, David. This is a recording. Surprise! No, you don't pay occupancy permit. What in the hell? What are these people thinking of? There's two two communities around Pittsburgh that are doing that. And it is absurd to me that these people, you're going to pay a $2,400 fine. Really, you're going to pay that? Hell no, you have got to be kidding me. Unbelievable. Okay, well, anyway, Jim Fleming got off here with Armored Recon, and they're talking immigration issues and stuff. He'll be in here in a few minutes. But, that's a good way of putting it, Doom. Doom said corruption seeks more outrageous corruption. And traffic cam, David, I don't know how it is. Well, I do know how it is. When you get a traffic cam ticket, people just pay it. Don't pay it. Take it to court. You can beat traffic cam tickets easy. All you have to do with any ticket is start costing the city more than the ticket is worth, and it will be dismissed. Now, are there exceptions to that? Yeah, I'm sure there are from time to time. But basically, if your $150 ticket is costing the city $200, they're not going to continue to pursue it. If it's criminal activity, where you've run over some little old lady crossing the street or something, that's going to be different. But running a red light, speeding, traffic cams, stuff like that, typically very, very easy to get out of. If you pay them, it's just because you want to give money to the city. It ain't because you have to. We're going to find out here pretty quick. Jim Fleming had the traffic cam experience here today, but unfortunately he's in a rental car, and that particular rental company will just pay the ticket and add it on to your bill. So you're kind of stuck here if you're in a rental car. But ordinarily, you don't have to do that. Let me go back over here. I've got a couple other things I want to try to get on here before we get on with the main thing here. Just real quick, there, the Humane Society of Missouri is, this isn't a big earth-shattering story or anything, but it is something to be aware of. The Humane Society of Missouri is offering a $2,500 reward for information leading to the arrest and conviction, or just information leading to find this guy that set a dog on fire. They finally had to euthanize the dog. His eyes were burnt out, and he was just burnt up, and his face was burnt up and everything. Just awful. Who would do that to an animal? The owner found him. The owner brought him in. They said this dog is a pit bull cross. And the owner brought him in. They were just sick about it. They said the dog was, just part of the family, they just loved the dog. His face, legs, eyes all burned up. And I don't know what kind of a dirty, rotten, sick bastard could do that to an animal. But anyway, I hope they find it. If you live in Missouri or near and you heard anything about this, here's a phone number for you to call if you happen to have some information. That's 314-647-4400. 314-647-4400. Dirty, rotten, no good, low life, cowardly punk does something like that. And I hope they catch him, and I hope they burn his eyes out, set him on fire. No, I don't really. In my deep inside, I feel that way, but I guess we probably shouldn't say that. Okay, we've got some other things to do. Oh, Hotshot said they... Oh, okay, that's not the same story. I just pulled in there. He said they caught him. I thought they'd caught the guy that set the dog on fire. Let's see. Who all we got in here anyway? Let me check the chat room real quick and see what's going on. Yeah, Jerry, that'd be okay. We can go for that. Let me check and see here real quick. We got A1 Paddler again. It's starting to be a regular. Counter 1, David, Desert Rat, Detinker, his Aviator, Hot Shot, Jerry, 99, Mike, 1911. I'm not sure. I don't think I've ever seen you before, Mike. Welcome to the shooting bench. Not Too Late, Pumpkin Cat, Rights at Risk, Tundra Boar, a handful of anonymous here, Doom. So where the anonymous folks come from, I have no idea, but I'm glad you dropped in here for tonight anyway. All right. Let's get started here on the militia thing. We'll have Jim Fleming in here in a minute. We'll stop. We'll bounce back and forth here a little bit. But it's becoming, we've had a couple of people that have asked about this, so I'm going to give you my very biased opinion on starting militias. Now, let's start here. There is no such thing. I mean, I guess there's really one militia, I guess, if you get right down to it, by United States Code, Section 10, Chapter, what is it? Title 10, Chapter 13, Section 311, says that all able-bodied males between the ages of 17 and 45 are in the militia. They don't give you a choice. They just say that you are. There are 8 exemptions to being in the militia. And I don't know them all right off the top of my head, but they are postal workers, shipyard workers, the vice president, and just a few other occupations there. There is no exemption for a conscientious objector, according to the United States Code. Your conscientious objectors will be whatever, cooks, drivers, computer people. They don't have to go shoot. They do have to be part of the militia. You don't just automatically get out because you're a conscientious objector. Most conscientious objectors, by my mind, actually are not. They only try to get out of it so claiming some kind of religious something other exemption. If truth were known, if these people would sit and ponder on this, if they wanted to serve their country, but they don't believe in shooting at people or whatever, there's several options. Now, some of you have heard the story of Sergeant York. Sergeant York was an awesome, incredible individual. Sergeant York is the one that marched 136, German soldiers by himself, captured them alone, by himself, without any help, marched them off the mountain, and because of using good tactics. If you ever get the chance to watch a movie called Sergeant York. It was a 1944 or 45 movie. It stars Gary Cooper. I cannot recommend that movie enough. It's an entertaining movie. It's fun to watch anyway. But if you look at the movie with moral issues in mind, then there's a lot to be learned, a lot of lessons to be learned in that movie. So I'm not going to spend any more time on that, but anyway, if you get the opportunity, find it. It's hard to find. It's an old show. But if you find one, my awesome wife found a copy of that after she'd searched high and low and found a copy of it for me when I was talking to her about it. And it's a damn fine movie. So, anyway. But getting back to the militia. Let's say that you want to start a group. You're not starting a militia. You're starting a group that falls within the definition of the militia. And stand by just a second. I got to get up and shut this door. Stand by a minute. Okay, that's better. Sorry about the dead air there. Anyhow, where was I at? you want to start a group, let's say you're all by yourself, just you. You wake up one morning and you decide that you want to do something. You're too old to join the Army, or too fat, or too, you know, got a broken leg or whatever. Not a broken leg, but you know what I'm talking about. They won't take you for whatever reason. So here comes Jim Fleming. We'll get him on here in just a minute right after the break. So whatever the reason is, you decide you want to start this group. So you're going to need to find two or three or four people that you trust implicitly. You're going to need to get along with these people. You're going to have to be like-minded. And you're going to get together and you're going to sit down over a Diet Dr. Pepper one day and decide what it is that you want to do. And when you decide you're going to start this group, then you're going to decide amongst yourselves after working together for a while, you're going to decide amongst yourself who is going to be the chief cook and bottle washer, who you're going to put in there for a leader. And yeah, I reckon it does, Jerry. I'm not sure what your group does, but yeah, I guess if it's a patriot oriented group, I guess that qualifies. But anyway, you're going to figure out who's going to lead this thing and get your structure set up. You can get along if you're just going to have three or four guys just out there practicing stuff together. You can do that without any structure. But if you're going to start adding to it and getting people in there, you have to have rules. You have to enforce the rules. You have to have a structure of some kind. You've got to have, not just for the prestige of putting stripes on your sleeve, but there has to be a way to pass down information and jobs and whatnot. And that's all. Hang on just a minute. John Galt's trying to ring in here. Where'd he go? Here he is. Hang on just a second. Make sure he knows I'm here. Okay. You're going to have a little bit of structure in there, depending on how big you're going to get and everything. You should allow for growth. That's why you have to have structure. You have to have rules. You need to have all that stuff carved in stone when you have your first three or four guys put together. The first order on the agenda is to sit down and get your bylaws and your rules and regulations and stuff made up as to how you're going to run the thing. If you don't, you will fail. Just depends on how long it's going to be until you fail, but you will. Because you're going to have allowances. You're going to have some way to deal with problems as they crop up. Problem people, problem, whatever it may be, as far as people's beliefs, people's physical condition, whatever. You've got to have a way to deal with all that. If you have to stop every other meeting or so and decide, well, we've got a new problem here, how are we going to deal with it? Then you're going to fail. So get all that stuff worked out to begin with. And once you do that, the militia is a democracy one time. And that's when you elect your initial leaders. After that, it becomes a benevolent dictatorship. It's about what it is. And in your rules and regulations, you need to have a way to get rid of whoever you elected as your main leader, your commander, your CO, your whatever you want to call him. You need to have a way to get rid of him if you have to. And I don't think that you need to have an election every year or every 2 years or whatever just to change leadership. If your leadership is doing a good job, you keep them there. If they're not, then you get rid of them and start over. But there has to be a way to do that, and that way has to be done in such a way that you can't just three or four guys get disgruntled and say, well, you're out of here. It can't run it that way. You've got to have your rules set up where you have a democratic way of doing things. Now, there's a difference between a democratic government and a democratic way of doing things. You're still going to have a number of people there that have to agree. There has to be, grievance procedures and all of that in order for you to be successful in this. And then you start recruiting your people. And on the one hand, it'd be nice if you could just go and say, all right, we're not going to take anybody except the ones that the people from the VFW or the people from the Lions Club or the people from your bridge club or your shooting club, your gun club, whatever. That's okay for a while. But as you grow and become reputable and more successful, more people are going to want to join. And if you've allowed for that, that's okay. If you want to have just four or five people and call yourself a militia group and go and beat your chest and have fun every Thursday night or whatever, and I guess that's okay. But you're not accomplishing anything. In order for you to accomplish something, there's groups out there that have several hundred people in them, and they're only successful because they have rules and regulations. They follow them. They've enforced them. And they have good leaders. Otherwise, they won't work. If you're not going to allow what you're doing, if you look at the times that we have coming up here, undoubtedly, your little group of five people, some of you, if you've got that in mind, I don't think you understand just how bad this is about to be. And your little group of five people is not going to cut it. I think that there's a place out there for leaderless resistance, but not entirely. I think there are people out there that will go and do their thing and working on our side, but without the benefit of leadership. And that's okay to an extent. It's not going to work for very long because if we can't, I mean, as a whole, let's say you have a thousand like-minded people in your state, and everybody believes in leaderless resistance. It may last for a little while, but if you're going to do that and then expect to put your state back together after this is over with, leaderless resistance is not going to be the way to do it. If you've got a thousand people and you've got a couple of hundred of them that believe in leaderless resistance, the rest of you want to get together and form an organized, well-oiled machine to work together, then I think that's fine. I think it's also fine if there is no leaderless resistance and everybody is organized, even if it's more than one group. You still have direction in what you're doing. And I think that that's critical. It's also critical that we take a break here about right now. So if you guys will stay with me just a minute, we're going to have Jim Fleming back in here with us right after the break. And hang on a minute, I got to get this in here. All right, stand by.
I'll be back.
Tune into the Shooting Bench at its new time, 5 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on Just Measures Radio Network. Join Cope for two full hours of political incorrectness, current events, gun talk, and so much more.
Years ago, I uttered the phrase too late as a warning that silver and gold prices would soon skyrocket, and thus they have this year. With our current financial predicament, you might want to consider someone who supplies silver, American Eagles, and other precious metals, a family dealer up in Mount Vernon, Indiana. Just Measures Coin Shop. Call Bobby at 812-305-7091 or click on the link at my homepage at johngaultfla.com.
The number of people looking to buy firearms is up nearly 50% compared to 2007, according to the FBI.
In the month of November, our gun sales were probably comfortably 250% of what an average month is.
All in favor of losing your rights? Please do nothing.
This rally is not about guns. But what these guns that everybody's going to wear represent is the true badge of the free man. That he can bear arms in defense of himself without permission from anyone. And that's what these arms represent.
Gun laws in the U.S. vary by state, and the amount of regulation is a hot-button political issue.
You have associated two U.S. senators and associating them or comparing them to terrorists. I said, well, they are.
Can't take me. Fill your hand, you son of a bitch!
You can't take me. I'm free. Oh, yeah, I'm free.
Now you listen to me.
Who the hell are you?
You know. You all know exactly who I am. Say my name.
You what? I don't have a damn clue who the hell you are.
Yeah, you do.
That's right.
Now, say my name.
John Galt on the Teotihuacan Radio Show, live Friday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern, only on the Just Measures Radio Network.
Okay, are you ready? Here's Colt Reynolds with another maximum dose of truth and common sense on the shooting bench, here on Just Measures Radio.
They say heaven's at the end, but so far it's been hell, and there's fire on the mountain, lightning in the air, rolling them hills, and it's waiting for me.
All right, we're back, and we have Jim Fleming. Some of you have seen him in the chat room from time to time. Busy man, doesn't get to come in here all the time. So, but we've got him captured in here and handcuffed to a chair, so he's going to be with us here for a little bit. Jim, how are you doing today?
I'm just fine, sir. I'm here live and in color.
Yeah, Jim has come a long ways and spent a lot of money to come out here and be on this radio show. So, now Jim come out here actually to take a class from us. We've managed to blow enough smoke and brag enough for the last while that he's been listening. He decided to come out and see if it was all that in a bag of chips like we said it was. So that's what he's doing out here. So, anyway.
I've learned a lot already today, and I've got a lot of unlearning to do yet.
A lot of learning or unlearning?
Unlearning and unlearning.
Yeah, we see that, and this is something I've talked about a lot, is the muscle memory thing. We get so many people that say, oh, yeah, I've been shooting since I was whatever, and, you know, I know how to do all that. But sometimes you get out there, and some of the things that we learn in recreational shooting, even though you may be a good shot, and Jim is, he shoots real well. But some of the things that we think are good may not be quite so much when you get out there and kind of see what it looks like from the bad guy. No, he didn't bring a 1911 T-Dog. Sorry about that. Now, Jim has a Southwest Shooting Authority custom Glock 22 that we did for him, what, a year ago?
Yeah.
A year ago or so?
Year and a half, maybe.
And sent it out to him, and he's doing real well with it. He did confess to me that he has a 1911. Do you really have a 1911?
Yes, sir, I do. I love her, too.
I'm sorry to hear that.
No, I'm not.
But he didn't bring it, I guess, so that's okay. Or did you bring it for a backup?
I remember your sign about the barbecue gun. Glock, excuse me, a 1911 is what you show your friends and buddies at the barbecue, but a Glock is what you show your enemies.
That's right.
I brought my Glock.
Okay. All right. So what does Marissa think about this so far?
She says she doesn't mind it. She doesn't mind sitting on the range waiting for me to do what we do all day. She enjoys watching us. Good. She's learning just by watching.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. Yeah, I mean, we tried and tried to get his lovely wife to get in here and shoot with us, but she's not quite up for it yet. Maybe we might get her in some other time. But anyway, I'm surprised the weather's holding out. It's been raining every day for weeks, and God, the damage that's been done to the roads around here and stuff is unbelievable. Some of the standing water that we see is, never seen it before. And so it's pleasant. We had sunshine, not too warm. Really, really, really nice day. Wasn't windy.
Mid-70s.
Great, great day today. Hopefully we'll be able to do the same tomorrow. But his aviator's got his own 1911 story to tell. We have type 1 malfunctions and type 2s and type 3s. Well, we had a type 4 invented when his aviator took a class with his SIG 1911. It was something nobody's ever seen before. I don't even remember what it was now, but it was ugly. But he has since repented of his ways and gotten rid of the 1911 and went to a Glock. So, yeah.
I have to admit, I did have a malfunction today. I was doing double.
I wasn't going to say that.
Nah, well, that's all right. I had the malfunction. The Glock didn't. Jim loaded a magazine with one round backwards. And it actually, the weapon cycled, the round went in backwards, and that was the end of my shooting.
Yep. The firing pin hitting the bullet didn't help.
Not a bit.
I actually didn't quite go in that far enough to do that, but you know, it's an honest mistake, and it just shows that when we talk about, people ask me all the time, why do we have to do this over and over and do this thing? What is the point of doing this? What is the point of doing that? Well, that's the point of doing that. When I tell people, you go to bed at night, you take the gun out, just like you do any other time, and you check your chamber, even though you loaded it up this morning. Sometimes we get things on our mind and we, you know, standing around here shooting the breeze, you know, or maybe you had a few beers, maybe your wife left, maybe you lost your job, you know, something where you haven't got your mind 100% in the game. You could have at some point during the day, for whatever reason, taken that gun out and done something and put it back in a different condition than what you thought it was in. So at night, check the chamber. Check the magazine, get it all back together. In the morning, do the same thing. So when you go off to save the world out in the morning, make sure that your magazine is loaded, or that the gun is in the condition you want it to be, whether it's loaded or unloaded, doesn't matter, as long as you know what it is. Check your magazines, check all your equipment, and say, okay, I'm ready. Bring it on. Whatever happens today, I'm prepared for it. Let's see. Let me go back to the militia thing just for a minute. It's important if you're gonna grow and get bigger, and I think that is a must. I think you have to perform. Maybe that's not the right word. Perform the service of. If you want to do what the militia was designed to do, what it's supposed to do, you're not going to do it with four or five guys. I think you're wasting your time. I think it's ludicrous. The bigger you are, and the better organized you are in having the proper leadership and everything, then you become something that Yeah, a formidable force to deal with, whatever the threat may be. Doesn't matter. It's just a matter of being able to deal with that situation as it comes up. And four or five guys ain't going to do it. I think that your group ought to be, you know, at a minimum, I think you should be looking at having a decent size group for a community when you have 25 people or so, minimum. And there's one group here in Arizona that has I don't know exactly what the number is, but it's quite a few. I think it's somewhere between 50 and 125. And there's a group, Northern California has a hell of a nice group up there. They've probably got 150, 200. The 51st out of Missouri's got a good group. There's a group in Oklahoma. There's one in Colorado. There's one in Michigan. Couple in Texas that are pretty good size. And these are not five-man groups. These are groups that have enough people to divide it into, you don't have several different squads or fire teams. They have support people. They have auxiliary people that will take care of the setting up camp, cooking, mending their tents and stuff. You know, they've got all the support stuff that they need. I know one group that actually, well, I'm not even going to say that. It's more than you need to know. But so if you want to do this, then sit down and talk about it and get your organization, your support figured out and what you're going to do, and then go do it. And if you want to have a public meeting so that you can get, you're going to have a recruiting, you're going to have recruiting standards. You're going to have physical standards of some kind. You're going to have marksmanship standards and training. You're going to need to have, now everybody, your leader doesn't necessarily have to be a high-speed, low-drag ninja warrior from the 5th Special Forces. If he's good with people and organized, if he's a businessman and is able to keep people together and motivate them, that may be your leader. He will have advisors and other people under him that will take care of the tactics and the fighting and all that stuff. But your main leader doesn't necessarily have to be a military man. He needs to be a leader. A leader is a leader. Whatever he may be, he may have run a computer programming place and had 75 people under him and everybody's happy and it's running smoothly and he's making money. He's a leader. What he needs then is military advisors to help him with some of his other stuff. So that's my take on getting it started there. And if you have people that are grossly overweight and can't keep up, then they need to get on a program and just because some people say, well, he has the heart, at least he's there. Well, he may be there, but if he becomes a liability to everybody else, there's no use of him being there. So you're going to have physical standards, and it doesn't have to be real, real stringent. But you need to have some standards there for him to meet, and give him a certain amount of time to meet them. You know, if you only give him 90 or 120 days or whatever, where they can meet these minimal requirements. And if they can't, then they go to the auxiliary. That's just my story, and I'm sticking to it. Jim, what?
One thing I think that what Cope is saying, maybe I'm going to rephrase it, but I'd think, God forgive me for using such language, but maybe a good organizer.
Not a community organizer.
Not a community organizer. No, we're not going there. But anyway, I think that's basically what Cope's saying. An organizer knows how to get people to work together.
Yeah, that's right. And that's what makes a leader.
That's leadership.
Now, we do public meetings every twice in a while, and where we get together and we go in and tell them like it is. We are a militia group. We're not a community watch group. We're not a quilting bee. We're not a whatever. We are a militia group. We, you know, it's a tell it like it is. Like the NRA says, never call it a weapon. It's a firearm. Or, no, it's not. It's a weapon. If you have it for self-defense, you're going to wind up killing people with it. It's a weapon. Don't candy coat it. Just tell it like it is. When we teach the NRA classes, of course, we have to use their terminology and everything. That's why I don't very often do NRA classes. But I will do them for youth. I'll do them for new shooters and stuff once in a while to get them interested in it and get them to shooting. And if they decide to move on into the defensive use of weapons, then we change gears and go at it a different way. But the public meetings that we go to, we go in and tell them first what people need to understand, first and foremost above everything else, is the legality of the militia, and that any group, any religion, any organization of any kind out there, there can be bad apples that screw it up for everybody. It's just the way it is. I mean, it happens with everything. It happens in schools. It happens in churches, in different stores. You can have a chain of stores, and you'll have one damn store out there that has poor customer service and is rude to somebody, and all of a sudden then you don't like the whole chain of stores because of the way you were treated at one of them. It doesn't mean that they're all the same. You know, there's people who won't join a certain religion because they knew one person that was a real jerk and screwed up, and then all of a sudden the whole religion is bad because you got one idiot in there that don't know how to act. And the militia is the same way. We get one Timothy McVeigh, and whether or not you believe he actually did what he did or is beside the point, if it was a false flag, then it accomplished its mission. But you know, you understand my point. You get one person, you get somebody out there that what are we looking at? Oh, you get somebody out there that is puts a bad taste in everybody's mouth, and all of a sudden it's the entire group. You know, we get a few, even though it was quite a few, but we get the Catholic problem and the little boys and all that going on. That doesn't mean that the entire church condones that. It means that for whatever reason that there were a few of them doing bad things with kids, and I hope they burn in hell for it. But that doesn't mean that the entire religion should be held accountable for what some of these people have done. And the entire militia is not bad because somebody blew up a building somewhere, or because somebody's talking about anti-government rhetoric or whatever the case may be. So make sure that people understand what your goals are, and that's the reason for having bylaws and rules and regulations and public meetings and public statements. Go out and talk to people. Talk to your sheriff. Tell him what you're doing. Make sure that he understands that you believe that your sheriff is the supreme law enforcement authority in his respective county, and that you will be under him or her, providing that their orders are constitutional and they recognize your chain of command. And if they want you to help with traffic control or search and rescue or whatever the case may be, then you go do it. Make sure that your people are, you set a certain amount of time, meetings and things that you have to come to. If whatever it may be, you decide what the standards are going to be. You'll come to at least one meeting a month, and you'll make at least one field training exercise every however often, whatever you decide to do. And if they don't meet those standards, then they go to the auxiliary or you kick them out. So this is what we do. And in order for you to be part of us, in order for you to be a benefit instead of a liability, you need to learn something. You need to train. You need to learn how to work with us and see what we do and how we shoot and how we do our thing. And you need to be able to do that also. And if you can't do that and be part of the team, and I'm sorry, you're a great guy, but we haven't got any use for you. And if you can't do that, and if you can't If you don't have the strength to tell somebody that, then you're probably not the leader that they're looking for either. Let's see here. Trying to keep up with the chat room here a little bit. Looks like Concretin's enlightening us with his lingual skills here. Lingual, is that right? He's just talking to us in Espanolish here. Anyhow, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. As far as I'll think of something else here in a minute. I come in here flying low and slammed on the brakes and bailed out of there and come in here and got everything going, and I am not as prepared as I should have been. Jim, bail me out here.
Well, you can blame it on me, folks. I kept him in the field all afternoon.
No, that's okay. If I hadn't forgotten my computer, I wouldn't have had to do that, but I had to go home and get it because we got a meeting tonight. Mm-hmm. So I'd have been fine if I hadn't forgotten my computer.
I'll take the blame. I got big shoulders.
All right. Yeah, he does. Jim's not a small guy. He's right up there about my size or maybe even a little bigger. So I gotta be careful what I say here. All right. Let me go and check here. I just seen here we had it's just about break time. Why don't we just go ahead and take a break a little early just for the heck of it. Let's do this. I think this is a good, no, let's don't do that. Stand by. Let's do that differently. Let me move this over here. I got to get John Galt's new ad in here again. So, all right, we're going to take a nice break, and we'll be back here in a little bit.
That's what I said. James is darn good, but he's better, and I'm better than both of them. No brag, just fact.
For the last 20 years, Army medics were taught to the same standard as civilian EMT paramedics. After the blow-up in the sandbox of Iraq and Afghanistan, the U.S. Army Medical Corps relooked on how medics were trained. There, training has prepared you on standards that apply to civilian emergency medical services that do not apply to the combat environment. Does this show actually mean combat? Not totally. Combat environments can be found in horrible natural disasters and, yes, man-made disasters. Between this show and live training, the Medic Shack will show you how to treat and survive most any natural or man-made disaster. So join us Sundays, 5 p.m. Mountain Time on the Just Measures Radio Network.
There's no response from command. Or from party leader Creedy. Or from the High Chancellor.
Why are you doing this?
Because he was right.
About what?
That this country needs more than a building right now. It needs hope.
Those who make peaceful revolution impossible will make violent revolution inevitable.
People should not be afraid of their governments. Governments should be afraid of their people.
Is it common sense to allow your activist judges to ignore your history, your culture, your Declaration of Independence, and every other founding document to remove God from public life? And endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights, their creator, not the ACLU, not the will of the atheist, or the anti-Americans that sit on the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco. Separation of church and state, yes. Separation of God from public life, never intended by your founding fathers. Is it common sense that the very political party who claims to be the party of the people and shouts, "We will bring change," consistently stops all common sense legislation to secure your borders, establish workplace verification, and stop taxpayer money for illegals. They called themselves progressive global thinkers. We had another word for them in 1776. We called them traitors. This happened all once before. 232 years ago, it led to revolution and thousands of dead in the streets. It will happen again unless you take back America now.
I hope we have once again reminded people that man is not free unless government is limited. There's a clear cause and effect that is as neat and predictable as the law of physics. As government expands, liberty contracts.
From my cold, dead hands.
Only an aroused citizenry will turn this uncommon sense around. And he or she who does nothing now is helping them to destroy America. My name is Thomas Paine, and I approve of this message. I only hope to God you will too.
Colonized America, we will stand for tyranny. Oh, he. And it's too late to apologize. It's too late. I said it's too late to apologize. It's too late.
Now you listen to me.
Who the hell?
You know. You all know exactly who I am. Say my name.
You what? I don't have a damn clue who the hell you are.
Yeah, you do.
That's right.
Now, say my name.
John Galt on the Teotihuacan Radio Show, live Friday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern, only on the Just Measures Radio Network.
Okay, are you ready? Here's Corp Reynolds with another maximum dose of truth and common sense on the shooting bench, here on Just Measures Radio.
They say heaven's at the end, but so far it's been hell, and there's fire on the mountain, lightning in the air, rolling them hills, and it's waiting for me.
All right, we're back. As most of you have figured out here, we are going to be doing a two-hour show tonight. I've decided what I'm going to do here, at least for the time being. I hate to keep bouncing you guys around. I want to keep doing this. If I had my way and could make any money doing this, I'd be doing a two- or three-hour show 5 or 6 days a week. And but since I'm not any money and it's actually starting to cost me money, then I've got to make some other plans. So I was going to do 1 hour all week, and that lasted about 3 days. I just can't do it. I've got to. What we're going to do here, John Galt's going to follow me on Friday. Well, let's just start with Monday. Monday night I have dedicated that to family time. So I'm doing 1 hour so I can get home in time to spend some time with the family and do things in the evening. Tuesday, I'm going to do 2 hours. Wednesday, I've got my Boy Scouts I got to go teach. So we're doing 1 hour so I can get out to there to the church in time. Thursdays, I'm going to do 2 hours. Tonight's Thursday. That's why we're doing 2 hours. And Friday, John Galt follows me, so I'm stuck with Friday being 1 hour. But that's okay because we got John Galt back for a little while. So we'll deal with that. We are going to continue to do on Fridays the music show and the oldies show. We're going to spend less time with ads and more time with music on Friday night since we've only got 1 hour to do it. I'm going to crowd as much in there as I possibly can, and then John Galt will follow. So that's the way it's going to happen for right now. If this security thing gets to work in the way we're hoping it will, I may have quite a bit more time, and I might be able to set some time. I might go back to 2 hours all the time. So just so everyone knows, we did get that big contract that we were trying, that we were shooting for. And we're not sure exactly when it's going to start yet, but it's going to be it's a good contract. It's going to last at least a year, and then we'll see what happens after that. So now we are charging off into the sunset here to go see if we can secure another contract or two like that. So anyway, that's going to work out real well for us. So. Now, something I neglected to mention a while ago, we need to tell you guys who Jim Fleming is, for those of you that don't know. And Jim Fleming, what we should have done earlier today was got on both of your websites and let everybody know that you were going to be on this tonight, if we thought about it.
Yes, sir.
But anyway, Jim runs, let me let you tell him. Jim runs two big Facebook pages, lots of people. So, Jim, won't you tell us about your two Facebook pages?
Well, my first one that I created, and it's my, heart and soul, is The Reloading Room. Yes, all three words. I created it. We don't do politics in there, but by golly, we do a heck of a lot of reloading. And the other second group Cope's talking about, and it just hit 5,000 members. It's a little bit older. It's a little bit older than, or younger than the Reloading Room is, but we hit 5,000 members in less than a year.
Yeah.
It's called NRA, as in, the National Rifle Association. We consider it an honor just to steal their initials. But we do the politics in there. A couple little people like to do their tinfoil hat thing. A little bit of survival stuff in there once in a while. A lot of gun stuff. But in the reloading room, we stay focused because, let's face it, reloading is, it requires education. I'm thrilled right now. I'm getting a hold on to two reloading manuals. And it's like, you look inside. If you know what's inside one of these things, heart to heart, if you actually have it memorized, you're going to have a lot of knowledge. But that's why we keep the reloading room where it is for an educational purposes. We don't need the distractions. We don't want them.
Well, your reloading room is, it's a specific topic that you've got out there. It's not for, on my page, if you don't cuss, you can talk about whatever you want to.
Yes, sir.
Care.
Yes, sir.
I don't even mind mild cussing, but if you get carried away with it, then I'll cut you off like an infected wart. But,
yes, sir.
But that's what we do.
Yes, sir.
You go to reloading to do reloading.
That's right.
And I don't have a problem with that. And for two reasons. One, because it tells me already automatically that this is a specifically, it is designed for one thing.
For reloading.
And that's fine. The other thing is, it's your room. You can do with it whatever you want. That's what people don't understand. You created it, and if somebody else created their room, and you want to get in there and talk about sex and all that stuff, that's your room. That's fine. And if we don't want to watch it, then we don't have to go there.
No, sir.
But when you go to somebody else's room, just like going to their house. If they don't want you to smoke in their house, then you go outside.
That's fact.
It's just that easy. It's really not hard to understand, Jim.
Well, sir, you do. I know you understand that. You've been that guy since day one. But believe it or not, folks, this guy here sitting across the table from me in the reloading room, he was member 94. I actually had to call him up to make sure he understood what I was doing because we consider it kind of rude to just throw somebody in a group if they have no idea what's going on.
Yeah.
And Cope was member 94. The reloading room is about almost at 4,100 members now.
Amazing how fast it's grown.
Well, it was created on July the 5th, 2011. And it's grown 3,000 members since September the 12th of last year.
Damn.
In a year's time, we picked up 3,000 members.
That's amazing. And I tell you, there's not a question you can ask about reloading that the answer isn't there. You can go in and ask somebody, or you can go in and do a search. If you guys know how to do a search on a Facebook page, and I can't imagine that there's not anything that you couldn't find.
Well, to do the search is very simple. If you've got a Facebook account, you have to look up the three words, all of them, and you just use the magnifier on the right side under the banner of the page, and it just put in your keyword. You can use a name. You can use a caliber. You can use anything like that, and Facebook will give you everything that it finds.
What you probably can't find in there is how to reload 22 magnums, just on account of I hadn't put anything in there about it yet. So you can find thing about shooting 40s in a 10 millimeter, though. And
that was in the NRA group, Cope.
Oh, yeah, that was the other
Yeah, Cope has something that isn't done. He's got a 22 Magnum shell in it with a 52 grain jacketed hollow point in it. They don't come that way.
Nope. No, we had to build. Did I ever tell you how I did that? Did you ever hear that show?
Well, I think you use a kinetic bullet puller to take a pull your healed bullet out. No, that's right. 22 mag isn't healed.
Yeah, it's a regular, just yeah. Like a
223 diameter projectile, isn't it?
What I did, yeah. Yeah, what I did was took a three-position turret in a Lee turret press, and the first thing I had to do was make a shell holder for it so it would stand up. So I took a 22 Hornet shell holder, turned it up sideways on an anvil, and tuned it up a little bit with a two-pound hammer, and then I took a piece of 30-thousandths thick steel in a horseshoe-type shape and super glued it in over the hole so the round wouldn't tip over in the primer hole there, and it gives it a flat surface all the way around to set on, which was a safety thing also. And I've still got that around here somewhere, maybe at the house. Yeah.
The one thing I could see that's a very good safety idea, because remember, folks, we're talking about rimfire cartridges, not centerfire. That's why he's not wanting it to tip over. He doesn't want pressure on either side. The pressure should be uniform, evenly distributed.
Yep. And so once I got the shell holder done, when I put the handle down, I run it up through. I've still got that turret somewhere, I think. And I'd get a hold of the bullet with a pair of vice grips and then ease the handle back up. And then I have boxes full of those bullets.
This man is talking about wasting perfectly good 22 Magnum bullets.
Well, I didn't waste them. I loaded them into 12-gauge shells.
That's interesting.
Yeah, that was awesome. Boy, you talk about
dispersion.
Bad news. That was an ugly round.
Yes, sir.
Anyway, and then I loaded different types of 223 bullets in the, or 224 caliber bullets in there. And in order to do that, I used the 22 Hornet seating die, screwed it all the way down to the length that I wanted. And it took a little bit of experimenting, but after that, I did hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of those things.
I do have a question for you, Coach.
What's that?
How did you actually crimp that? Did you actually crimp that the casing back onto the bullet?
No.
Not even a taper crimp?
Nope, didn't crimp it at all. Since we didn't, it wasn't fired. It was a new casing.
Right.
So when I put it back in there, there's well over, well, probably
nearly a quarter
3/16, close to a quarter of an inch of bearing in there. Never had a problem with
it. So you just original factory ammo retention.
Left the same charge of powder in it. And I had to experiment with that a little bit to get it where I want it. Come to find out, there's no use messing with it. Just leave it like it is. Pull the old one out, put a new one in. It's ready to go.
Now, did you fire this in a revolver or did you fire it in a single shot handgun?
It was way too long for a revolver.
Okay.
With bullets sticking out, there's no way. And I tried to shoot them in a rifle, and it sucked.
Really?
Big time. You couldn't break the glass out of a phone booth if you were inside of it. You couldn't hit the target at 25 yards.
Too much drag for the powder charge you're using.
Yeah, apparently. It was the twist of the barrel.
Yeah, okay. Too much drag.
It wouldn't work. You couldn't shoot an 8-inch group at 25 yards with it. It was awful.
That I've never heard.
I'll tell you one damn thing. In that 10-inch contender barrel, it would damn sure shoot.
Mm-hmm.
My best group with that load at 100 yards was, I'll have to go look at my thing again, but I think it was about 1.25 inches.
That's pretty respectable
at
for contender.
Yards.
Now, is that iron sights, or did you have optics
on
it?
No, I had scope on it. We had rifle scopes on them.
Yeah, right.
I killed prairie dog. 209 yards was my my record for a prairie dog with that. It shot really, really well.
Do you mind if I take you into sort of a prepping kind of tangent in this reloading idea?
Sure.
You folks ought to think about this. How about converting fired 22 rimfire cases into 55 grain, 224 diameter, .224 diameter, open pointed bullets?
Yep.
And it's like, Cope knows exactly what I'm talking about. I'm talking about swaging. Look it up. And I actually run a third group. It's a small group, and we are strictly about swaging. But in there, It's a prepping skill. Think about it. When a balloon goes up and we can't get bullets, you can make your own if you have the dyes.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, you know that the guy that started RCV, that's how he started that company.
Vernon Spear started it with bullet jackets, and so did Joyce Hornaday. They started out with, with 22 empty cases.
Yep. And that's how they started. Their whole company started around 22 bullets that they made out of empty 22 cases.
Yes, sir.
And there's no reason in the world. I don't know what the dyes cost to do all that, but
Corbin's pretty. What the problem with Corbin is not so much the price. Well, it's $2,000 roughly to just get set up. But the problem is their 2-year lead time.
Oh wow!
Yeah, you put $2,000 out, you have a right to expect some return quickly. Well, that doesn't happen. Corbin's pretty busy. There's a few others out there, but nobody's actually making the dyes. There's one guy, BT Sniper, on castbullets.com. He's doing it, but he's got like a year lead time now. Mm. He's just overworked. He needs help or whatever. But the point is, it's out there. But a lot of us in the swaging group are literally making our own tooling.
Yeah, if you have somebody's got a machine shop and knows what they're doing, maybe you could figure out how to do it yourself.
The guy sitting across the table from you has been working in a machine shop since 1978.
You ought to be able to.
I can
figure it out then. There's a lot of different prepping skills like that you can do and have that stored away. I don't think we don't have 2 years left.
I'm making Cope look at something here, folks. I'll get to it in a minute.
We don't have 2 years left to wait. The $2,000 is going to be tied up waiting on something that you haven't got time to wait on. You're probably going to need to put into other types of prepping skills. But if you have somebody, you know somebody around that is qualified and skillful enough to make those type of dies, then I would say get on it.
All you need is a good reloading press. If you have put it in 7/8-14 bolt, and you can put everything else through that rock chucker sitting behind me. What I distracted Cope with a few minutes ago is I actually made him look at the 35 Remington page in the Spear Bullets Reloading Manual number 14. And the point is, it gives you a little bit of flexibility because you can use 357 Magnum bullets in that 35 Remington.
Yeah.
You know, I cast my own bullets a lot of times, and I have quite a few cast bullets going in my 35 Remington barrel for my contender.
Yeah. The 35 Remington, you can get it in a contender. You can get it in you can still get it in several rifles, can't you?
Yes, sir.
And you could, for light loads, put 9mm bullets in it.
That's right. Yeah. Well, the idea I'm talking about, and I think Cope will endorse this idea, is the idea of don't being so closed-minded, be a little bit flexible and a little bit versatile.
I can't imagine, in my wildest dreams, I can't imagine anybody would ever say that. You can't shoot 22 mag. You can't reload 22 Magnum bullets. You can't shoot 40s in a 10mm. You can't shoot underwater. You can't. You can't shoot a handgun at 500 yards. Actually, Jim was out there shooting at the Whittington Center the other day. What was it, 1,100 and something yards?
We were shooting at a great white buffalo out there. It's a white steel buffalo target, and we were shooting at it with a 45 ACP, but we just couldn't track the bullets. But we have video in the reloading room where Tom McClellan and I were both shooting at the same range. I was scoring hits at 385 meters, but I just couldn't bring it in. But he scored a hit on the pedestal at 500 meters on the rim.
Yep, it can be done. There's no doubt about it.
Now, you got video on YouTube, Cope, where you were doing that big steel plate. That's a 4x4 plate, and he was scoring solid hits at 500 yards. Folks, I'm telling you, Tom McClellan put a hit on a piece of 4-inch pipe at 500 meters.
Yep.
I've got video to prove it.
There's those kind of things just can't be done.
No, sir, they cannot be done.
Well, I tell you, and I've said this before, I've devoted whole shows to this. You have to, with what's coming up here, if you can't think outside the box, and you might as well just go ahead and turn your stuff in and go stand in line for your cup of soup and go and do what you're told, and that's going to be. If you can't think outside, there's going to be no damn box to think in pretty soon. If you can't think outside the box, you're sunk. It's done. And we don't have 2 years to wait for that, so you might as well start getting squared away here.
There's an old movie that comes to mind. It's called Soylent Green, where they
Charles
Nelson. Exactly, where they actually wind up finding out they're eating things they don't know they were eating.
Yep.
Soylent Green. I'm not going to take and get into it. I'm not going to get into it, folks, but look it up. You look it up. If you're interested, look it up.
Yeah, it's. I wouldn't say that would be I think it's unlikely, but I don't think it's impossible. When it's, things get bad enough.
It's far-fetched, but yes, sir, you're right. It's far-fetched, but you know what? What do you do with all the surplus bodies?
Mm-hmm. It's, I think it's very far-fetched, but I sure don't think it's impossible. I think it's something to store in the back of your mind and just kind of sounds... if you can get past the, you know, if you didn't know you were eating it, it's probably fine. It's the knowledge of doing it that I think that, and you know, it, the knowledge of doing it itself wouldn't bother me as bad as I don't think that falls within the realm of what my Heavenly Father thinks I should do with people meat. I think that's not, I don't think that's kosher. So, and I don't mean kosher from a religious viewpoint, but just
acceptable,
not cool.
Acceptable, very unacceptable.
And I don't think that the could you get past the idea of doing that? Well, I'm sure you can. There's been a lot of people that they say that it's as good as pork.
Not on our watch.
Yeah, that's right. And actually, they call it long pig because it tastes so much like pork.
Yep.
And so it's not anything that I don't think it's a good thing to do.
No.
Not because I'm squeamish about it or anything like that. I just don't think that it's a moral, ethical type deal there.
To my way of, excuse me, I didn't mean to step over you. My way of thinking, it's dehumanizing.
Mm-hmm.
And we are human beings. And if you can't, if you become that dehumanized, you're not human any longer.
Yeah,
you're just an animal out there.
And you heard about the soccer team that crashed their plane in Venezuela and back? I think it was Venezuela. Was it Venezuela?
It was in South. No, it was in Chile. I believe it was up in the Andes Mountains.
Yeah, it was. And they have resorted to cannibalism. The Dahmer Party. Not the Dahmer Party.
Donner.
Donner Party, yeah. Dahmer did it on voluntarily. But the Donner Party, they wound up.
But you know those kids in South America, and even the Donners, those people were ruined after they did that. They did what they had to do. They survived. Yes, okay. But we're talking about people dying if you don't have something to eat, literally starving to death. Yeah. And even then, it was not considered acceptable. It was considered inexcusable. And those kids are ruined for life in their head and minds and their attitudes. Yeah. Hey, they were the ones in South America. They were eating each other.
Yeah. What kind of dreams do you think they're still having and will have until the day
they die? Don't think they dream once. I think it's an eternal nightmare. Day in, day out, day long, day night. I think it's a nightmare, Cope. I really do.
And they, even though they had to do it to live, it's probably considered the single most barbaric thing that person can do.
Yes, sir. But at the same time, this is a Western attitude we have. There are societies out there that cannibalism is considered acceptable.
Absolutely. Not only acceptable, it's common everyday deal.
If you eat your ancestors, for example, you know, you may gain their experience. That's some of the way out there thinking in those societies.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll just kind of get the experience that I can as I go along, and and we'll skip the ancestry.
Sorry, I bring that terrible subject up. When I mentioned Soylent Green, I knew where this was going to go.
Well, yeah, I think it's something to talk about though, because there'll be people faced with horrible decisions before this is all over with. It may be the next generation, but you know, we may not have those decisions. We're going to see it coming. There's no doubt, unless we die prematurely, you know, some reason, in a car wreck or whatever, we're going to see it. But I don't know if we'll see it quite that bad yet. That'll come probably a few years down the road. People may be faced with that.
Well, I grew up reading George Orwell's 1984,
mm-hmm.
and so that's sort of where I get these wild and wacko ideas.
Have you, Amy talked about I talked about it with Jay out there a while ago. Have you read the story or heard the show we did about the Bosnian guy that survived some of the most horrible stuff like that?
Did you have him on the air, or was that another podcast?
No, that was something else. And, I don't remember what the guy's name was, but Amy did a complete show, and I followed up with basically the same thing.
I must have missed that one.
There's two shows out there on that. And this guy, yeah, T-Dog, that was the Book of Eli. That was a great show.
Yes, it was.
Good, good show. And the ending kind of surprised me, but it was great. I really liked that show. And there's, you know, all of these shows like that, Red Dawn and the Book of Eli and all these kind of things. There's
Mad Max,
yeah. Is it completely far-fetched? I don't know. Right now it seems like it is, but there's still things to be learned in there. There's things, every movie, regardless of how far-fetched it is, every book that you read has learning points. It has things that you think, oh, I never thought, what if that happened? Or what could I do to avoid that? Whether it's with ammunition or food or travel, clothing. You look at Rambo, the first Rambo. And he went off and found that piece of a tarp or whatever it was and cut the holes in it and made himself a poncho out of it. The whole show, absolutely fictitious. I mean, yeah. You know, whatever, far-fetched. But I still think there's learning points in there. There's things that you can stick back in your box of tools that you may accidentally use sometimes.
Yes, sir.
And I go through quite a few different movies. Not because I think that the movie is factual, it's that the movie makes me think. And there's a huge difference in that. I don't think Red Dawn is factual, but I think that there's some things in there that makes me think about what if me and my group or me and my family run across similar circumstances, what would I do? And it may not have a damn thing to do with the movie, but the circumstances of the movie made me think about what the family, what we might have to do. Oh, Pete. Hey, you went up to the Cody Shooting Center. Was it Cody Shooting Center? I know what you're talking about up there, up in Cody. He just got back from the shot a CMP match up there. That's where I shot my, I was in Cody, Wyoming, where I shot my match and got my CMP. Back then it was, what was it, the director?
Director of Civilian Marksmanship.
DCM.
Program.
Yeah, DCM.
DCMP.
Yeah, now it's CMP, but it was DCM back then when I got mine. But I shot it at the same place, Pete. That was right where I live. And glad to see you in here. I don't see you on the shooting bench very often. I'm glad you made it in here. It was out at that place where you shot your match where I met Denver Pyle and Lorenzo Lamas. And who was the guy that used to be, not Leave It to Beaver, but Wally? Remember Leave It to Beaver? And Wally was his friend. What was his name?
Tony Dow.
Might have been. I don't
know. No, Tony Dow was Beaver's brother.
No, not his brother. Wally. Not Wally.
Wally was his brother, right?
Who's the other guy? The kid that was, they was always hanging out together. What the hell was it?
Ask for some help.
Yeah, they're all telling me the same thing, Tony Dow, that you're saying. No, it wasn't Beaver's brother. It was
Beaver, it was Wally's buddy is what Cope's talking about.
Yeah, Wally's buddy, not Whitey, not Lumpy. Eddie Haskell, yeah.
Yeah,
Eddie Haskell,
that's
who
it
was.
Thank you.
I met him out there. Who else did I meet out there? Dale Robertson, you remember him? That was the second time I'd met him.
What Cope is talking about, and I'm learning now, is the shooting society we have out there. Shooters are a very small sport. It's a very, very small sport. You know, you might have hundreds of thousands of basketball players, baseball players, and so on and so forth. They get the publicity. Us shooters don't, but we're very small and we're a very tight-knit community. He just named out major characters. Denver Pyle, you know, he was the old man on Wagon Train. Stuff like that. Wasn't he on Wagon Train? Or was he Davy Crockett's buddy in the movie?
No, Denver Pyle was, I remember, he was in a lot of shows, but the one that people remember him most was Dukes of Hazzard.
Uncle Jesse.
Uncle Jesse in Dukes of Hazzard. That was
yeah.
Denver Pyle.
Yeah,
hell of a nice guy. Oh, who else I met was the guy that does the diabetes commercials. Oh, shoot. All right, guys, help me out here.
Another name that Cope hasn't said yet is Tom Selleck.
I haven't ever met Tom
Selleck. No, not met, met him, but met. He's one of us. He's one of us shooters.
Yep, absolutely. Who is the guy that is the nicest guy you'd ever want to meet? And Denver Pyle was, too. He's an awesome guy.
Glad to hear it.
He was neat. The one that I met that I didn't like that was a real punk was Steven Seagal. What a punk he was.
Conceited.
He's full of himself. He's arrogant, and I did not like him a little bit. Wilford Brimley, yeah, that's who it is, Concrete, and thank you. Wilford Brimley's an awesome guy. He's a shooter.
Yeah, he had the great big handle mustache, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, okay. Yeah. Thank you, Concrete.
Yeah, he's the guy that does the, I don't remember what, has something to do with injections or blood testing equipment or whatever.
Yeah, okay. I don't think Mr. Blee's around any longer, is he?
No, he died here. That's why
we don't see the commercials.
Ago, maybe something like
that's
that.
A shame. What? This world's a lesser place for that.
Yeah, he was a great guy. A lot of fun. The Lorenzo Lamas, I never knew too much about Lorenzo Lamas. The only movie that I remember him in was, it was a series, Renegade. Good show. I really liked that show.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right, we need to go take our final break here, and we'll be back here in just a minute. Let's see, do I want to put that in there? Yeah, it's a good thing to put in. All right, give us a few minutes here.
I'll be back.
No.
Now you listen to me. Who the hell are you?
You know. You all know exactly who I am. Say my name.
You what? I don't have a damn clue who the hell you are.
Yeah, you do.
That's right. Now, say my name.
John Galt on the Teotihuacan Radio Show, live Friday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern, only on the Just Measures Radio Network.
For the last 20 years, Army medics were taught to the same standard as civilian EMT paramedics. After the blow-up in the sandbox of Iraq and Afghanistan, the U.S. Army Medical Corps relooked on how medics were trained. Their training has prepared you on standards that apply to civilian emergency medical services that do not apply to the combat environment. Does this show actually mean combat? Not totally. Combat environments can be found in horrible natural disasters and, yes, man-made disasters. Between this show and live training, the Medic Shack will show you how to treat and survive most any natural or man-made disaster. So join us Sundays, 5 p.m. Mountain Time on the Just Measures Radio Network.
What should we do?
There's no response from command. Or from party leader Creedy. Or from the High Chancellor.
Why are you doing this?
Because he was right.
About what?
That this country needs more than a building right now. It needs hope.
Those who make peaceful revolution impossible will make violent revolution inevitable. Inevitable. Inevitable.
Inevitable. People should not be afraid of their governments. Governments should be afraid of their people.
Is it common sense to allow your activist judges to ignore your history, your culture, your Declaration of Independence, and every other founding document to remove God from public life? And endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights, their creator, not the ACLU, not the will of the atheist, or the anti-Americans that sit on the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco. Separation of church and state, yes. Separation of God from public life, never intended by your founding fathers. Is it common sense that the very political party who claims to be the party of the people and shouts, "We will bring change," consistently stops all common sense legislation to secure your borders, establish workplace verification, and stop taxpayer money for illegals. They call themselves progressive global thinkers. We had another word for them in 1776. We call them traitors. This happened all once before. 232 years ago, it led to revolution and thousands of dead in the streets. It will happen again unless you take back America now.
I hope we have once again reminded people that man is not free unless government is limited. There's a clear cause and effect here that is as neat and predictable as a law of physics. As government expands, liberty contracts.
From my cold, dead hands.
Only an aroused citizenry will turn this uncommon sense around. And he or she who does nothing now is helping them to destroy America. My name is Thomas Paine, and I approve of this message. I only hope to God you will too.
Colonized America, we won't stand for tyranny. Oh, he. And it's too late to apologize. It's too late. I said it's too late to apologize. It's too late.
I just hate stupid people.
Welcome back to another segment of The Shooting Bench with your host, Coke Reynolds, here on Just Measures Radio Network. All right, we're going to finish this up here, and then we got another meeting tonight, and then we're going to get up in the morning, start a little earlier, have a little more time to put off more rounds tomorrow. We kind of started a little bit late this morning, didn't get as much done as we wanted to do. We're going to make up for it in the morning, and then we're going to take a nice long, probably at least a 3-hour break, and then go back there and play in the dark. Did you bring a flashlight?
Right. Yes, sir.
All right, good deal.
I forgot, folks on the radio, they can't see what I'm saying.
Yeah, Jim was nodding. Yeah, I got a flashlight. Hell yeah. Oh yeah, I got one. So yeah, the whole night shooting thing is an eye opener too. When you people say, well, yeah, I'm going to do this and that and the other when the bad guy comes and it's dark and when you find out what the shadows do and what the lights do and your depth perception and judging distance and stuff after dark, it changes things quite a bit. Your ability to use night sights effectively or a flashlight effectively without jeopardizing yourself. Flashlight can get you killed just as easy as it can help you take care of what needs to be done. So we'll spend quite a bit of time on that. We have found that one girl shooting out there is having a little bit of trouble with her factory magazine release on the Glock. I wish Glock would change that. They did better with the fourth generation ones, but it still has pointed square corners. It's still hard on the fingers.
Don't forget, after the show, you need to look, see if you've got that aftermarket magazine release.
Oh, okay. Yeah. If I have one, it'll be right over there. I'll go check. We put one in yours, didn't we?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so we need one for her.
I've got an Oval magazine release in mine.
Okay. I need to see. I know I have one for a .45 over there, and it'll work. It just sticks out a little bit more. We'll just have to have the gun here, though, because we've got to put it in an arbor press and cut the notch out for it. We can't do it out in the field. So unless I can get them to come down tonight, which I might be able to see if I can get them on the phone, if I can find one, see if they can come down here, and we'll do that right quick.
Yep. Yeah, actually, an oversized magazine release might actually do her little tiny hands a lot of good.
It'll help.
She's got little bitty hands.
Yes, she does.
Her index finger, I'm talking about the pointer finger, is not as big as my little pinky on my right hand.
No. Yeah, that would help her a lot. It helps me a lot. I like it. It puts It makes it where I can absolutely run that gun as fast left-handed as I can right-handed.
Well, I don't know if Cope mentioned it or not, but what we're talking about, the young lady, she's a southpaw. She's shooting left-handed, so she's using her trigger finger to release the magazine, and the sharp square corners on the stock magazine release are just chewing her finger up, all to pieces. We actually, for a splint, or for a patch, a band-aid on the problem, she literally put a band-aid on her finger to mm-hmm. take and give her a little bit more padding.
I wonder why there's two problems with Glock that are so easily correctable and cheap. I can't imagine why Glock's never done it. And that is the underside of the trigger guard, which eats the hell out of your middle knuckle if you don't do something with that. We radius that with the grip reduction. That's standard. We just do it. We don't ask. We just do it.
Well, I know you cured my problem. My problem was that this Glock 22, it was banging me I'm right-handed. My index finger is my trigger finger on the right hand. But what was the problem is the gun under recoil was coming up and slamming me on the right side of my fingernail on the underside, and it hurt like hell. After mm-hmm. a while, you put 10 rounds through there, 10 stiff rounds, and it's like, that's enough. I don't want to do no more. Well, yeah. What you did was you put these finger channels wrapped around for weak hand, strong hand, and I was out there firing away. I got kind of mad at the target because I kept missing. I put 12 rounds out there, and I never have done that before you did this relief work on mm-hmm. on the gun.
Well, there's some simple little things. I mean, I guess I'm glad that they don't because it gives us something to do. But I don't know why they don't fix them. They made a piss poor, feeble attempt at fixing some problems with the fourth generation gun, but they could have done a whole lot more to it. It was funny when, and that's the reason Glock doesn't like me very much, because we have fixed a lot of their. We've done about 2,600 of their guns.
Hmm.
And I went to one of the trade shows out at one of our distributors having out in Vegas. I went out there like three, maybe four times, just consecutive years.
Mm-hmm.
And the second year I went out there, I talked to the Glock. You know, Glock has a great big booth out there, and they're telling everybody all the wonders of the Glock. And I went up there and was talking to them. Then I went and got my case, and I brought it down, and I showed them all the guns. They oohing and aahing. Wow, this is something else. And so the next year I went out, and I'm walking down the aisle, and I'm just looking. I hadn't even made contact with them yet. I'm just walking down here. And they're 20 yards ahead of me. Yeah, probably 10, 15 yards. And the guy stood up and said, "Hey, you're the Glock guy, aren't you?" I said, no, you guys are.
It's funny because I like to tease Cope. You know, Glocks, they use the word perfection. Well, how come they have to have guys like Cope come around and customize them?
That's right. It's so trivial little things that would make that thing so much better. I mean, even if they don't want to change the grip, okay, they don't want to do that. But we're talking about not safety, but
comfort.
Comfort things. Comfort to the point where it brings blood.
That's right.
And the grip reduction, the fourth generation helped with the grip problem. It's not right yet, but it's better. The bigger magazine release is interchangeable. You can switch it to it's ambidextrous. Well, it's not ambidextrous. It's interchangeable. You take it off and change it over to the left side. That doesn't make it ambidextrous.
All I can say is it's just a good thing you're still making Gen 3.
Yeah, and they don't have any plans of stopping that, and I'm glad. That's the Gen
It sounds
3
like
the
it actually, as unpopular as Gen 4 seems to be, it sounds like they may wind up just jumping to Gen 5 and pretend Gen 4 never existed.
Maybe so. And there's nothing wrong with the Gen 2s. Especially once you do a grip reduction and everything on the Gen 2, there's no way of telling that it wasn't a Gen 3 except for the there is too. You got the extra pin in it, and you got the accessory rail on it. But other than that, there's not a thing in the world wrong with Gen 2s. I've heard. I'm going to look that up real quick and see if. I never did hear anybody say anything about the Gen 3s, but the Gen 2s, Gen 4s. Really did have a problem. They they had some reliability problems, had to work on some springs and stuff. And let's see here. We got some breaking news here.
It's gun gossip, folks. It's I got it on good authority. I can't say anything more than that. But a little bird gave me a little piece of tidbit of gossip about a Cope's looking it up. He's trying to take and find something. But what I can tell you is this is strictly hearsay. I could be making it up for all y'all know, and I didn't. But anyway, Cope, while Cope's looking, let me know if you're finding anything, Cope.
Not.
Well, we don't have to name names.
Not Ian Glockbuster. Is there any other name, maybe?
Maybe use the same name, but use polymer, you know, in your search terms. I don't want to use the name just yet, but let's just say that a really large, reliable firearms company might be bringing out something that they're going to try to take and break into the law enforcement market later on this year. Be kind of a nice Christmas present sort of thing. But I didn't say that. I'm making all this up too, Cope. And I'm just lying to you. No, that's not true. I know. Have I thoroughly confused everyone?
Well, there's nothing in there yet, so it's a well-kept secret.
Well, this particular person said that he said that a lot of times folks that are in his position have to sign non-disclosure agreements.
Yeah.
So it's a secret. An open secret. But anyway. I will say one thing for Gaston Glock. Whatever he did about getting the marketing people here in the USA, he got that one exactly right. You know, what is it, Cope? 80% of the law enforcement departments?
70%,
are carrying Glocks on duty. I've got a friend of mine back where I live in Pennsylvania. He lives up in New York State. He works Cattaraugus County, and he hates his issue weapon, even though he's good with it. He just hates it. It's a Glock. He loves his 500 Magnum.
Now, Hotshot Glock does not make a rifle. There's been lots of people, lots of rumors, lots of things about them coming out with a carbine, and those rumors have been going around for 10 or 12 years. But if they did, I would be all over it.
Didn't they make, or didn't somebody talk about Glock actually creating a shoulder stock for that, similar to the old Mauser?
Glock didn't make it, but there is one made.
Oh, okay.
And, of course, it turns it into an SBR when you do
right.
that.
Right.
But there's a stock that comes out that goes up in the cavity in the back of the gun. So if it's a modified gun, you can't do it.
Right.
But it goes up in that cavity and locks mm-hmm. in place, and it's pretty right. pretty neat little deal. Be a good little entry weapon mm-hmm. with that. But I'd like to see him come out with a pistol caliber carbine that would go along, you know, 49mm, 10mm, mm-hmm. 45, that would be a companion for your carry weapon. They use the same magazines.
Well,
that would be awesome.
It's just like the old carrying a Marlin 1894C mm-hmm. and 357 and a revolver on your other hip.
That's
and they're
exactly
both,
right.
Both chambered for the same ammunition. I've got one at the house, and I put the same ammunition from the same pocket in mm-hmm. the two different guns.
And I would like to see a little 40 caliber semi-automatic
that
carbine
would be
that
a
would
little...
go along and 10mm go with it.
Mm-hmm.
That 10mm carbine would be a...
It'd be a groundhog gun.
Kicker, boy.
It'd be a groundhog gun.
Damn right. That'd be a lot of gun. I mean, even with the hand loads that I use, whether they're proper or not, that 10mm scares the hell out of 41 Magnum ballistics.
Mm-hmm.
It's not too far behind it.
No, bullet diameter is almost that anyway.
Yeah. You stick that in a carbine length barrel, you know, a 16-inch barrel.
Yeah, you're talking nearly 2,000 feet per second.
Bad news, boy.
Yes, sir.
That would be so neat. But that would be plenty for all any deer, hogs, you know, whatever.
Well, you could use that for black bear, I would think.
Oh, hell yeah. Absolutely. Black bear, I mean, black bear has been killed with
357s
and
22s, but 22s. You know, you shoot them until they're dead when you do that.
Yeah, it's not necessarily just because you kill some. There's been grizzly bear killed with a 22.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make it a
bad guy. That ain't smart to do.
Lady killed one that was ripping her door off, and if the bear had come in the house, you know, she'd have been in trouble. So she busted out the kitchen window out of the trailer house and leaned out the window with her 22 and kept shooting in the head until it died. So, I mean, it'll do it. It's just not doesn't make it a difference.
Shoot it until it's dead, or either that or it's going to die from infection.
Yeah, hopefully before it eats you.
I hear you.
Yeah, I'd have to say, Doc, that your Doc says a well-trained and motivated man with an 1851 Navy black powder revolver is much more dangerous than most cops or other shooters. And then I would say, with most gun, it doesn't have nothing to do with Glocks. But yeah, for somebody that's well-trained and well-motivated, don't make any difference what they have. It's going to do better, certainly better than the average cop. We've been through that time and time again. And it continues to be a happening thing.
A shooter with an SR-22 can do the same thing. It doesn't mean it's going to work as quickly.
Yep.
But, you know, you practice with an SR-22 and then you take and fire the center fire caliber, same frame but center fire caliber. You know, you practice with your 22. You even carry your 22.
Yep.
It's better than the one at the house.
Better than a pocket full of rocks.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
What's the most effective caliber gun, Cope?
The one you have on you.
Yes, sir.
Yep. Whatever it may be.
Preaching to the choir.
There's things I'd rather have, but I don't feel grossly undergunned with anything. You know, because I think that you are primarily the weapon, the tool that you use. You know, to help with that.
Mm-hmm.
Not a big fan of carrying a 25, not a big fan of carrying a 22. But if I had one of my Mark II Rugers and that was all I had, I'm pretty damn good with those Mark IIs.
Mm-hmm.
If it required 5 or 6 shots to get the job done, I'm confident that I could put those on target in, second and a half.
Like you keep saying, shoot them to the ground. Well, you know, an entire magazine of 22 rimfire is 360 grains of lead in that particular target.
Mm-hmm.
That's a considerable amount of lead.
And that goes back to my reasoning for the 10 millimeter in Big Bear country.
Mm-hmm.
For several things. One is the familiarization of the gun, because I carry one every day,
mm-hmm.
and the ability to put 15. Basically, almost 41 Magnum rounds on target in, second half.
180 grains times 15. Y'all figured out the math.
That's a lot of weight.
That's
plus
just
the fact that I can do a reload in a second and a half. You know, 10 rounds is 1,800 grains.
Right. And I'm trying to do at 2,700 grains. We're talking about a third of a pound of lead.
Yeah. So would I call it my hunting gun for grizzly bear?
No.
Probably not.
375 is a little bit better.
That would be better, yeah. But if it was just bad breath distance between me and him, and I would rather probably have my Glock 20 than anything else I can think of.
It's kind of interesting. Out here, I'm, as you folks might know or have picked up, I am from Pennsylvania. It's where I live. But out there we have black bears, but the black bears are more scared of us than we are of them. But out here in this country, and I've heard Cope talk about grizzly bears up at the Whittington, they said about the only thing they have there is black bear. Well,
yeah.
You know what? That's fine. I just happen to know that I'm in bear and elk country out here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There was a lady attacked, and I think maybe two of them, because they say one of them died, too, right over here in Pine Top.
Yes, sir.
That was the year... I think it was the winter that we came up here, earlier the winter when we moved up here.
I don't remember hearing that.
It was attacked by a bear.
That's a shame.
And typically, most of your black bears that attack humans are either because you've gotten between a mother and her cubs, or you've provoked them in some way, or they're old and can't catch a deer anymore, can't go out and find anything else.
And you're just meat to them.
Where they don't, yeah. Of course, they don't typically catch deer anyway, but they do occasionally. But anyway, ordinarily you can just stomp your foot. Matter of fact, you might have heard me talk about the one that was, they come to the house over here when we lived in Pine Top.
No. Go ahead.
I heard the dogs barking, and I looked out there and I seen something dark colored that was outside the fence. And
mm-hmm.
I said, well, the dogs are all accounted for. And I went over there and there's a black bear, about a medium sized bear. He wasn't very big.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'd have given anything to have that on tape. I stomped my foot and hollered and took off after that bear, and he turned around. There's still skid marks in the driveway out there where he took off. And That is the funniest thing I ever seen.
You know?
He run over there, hit that fence, boom, tripped him head over heels, and he got up and never heard from him again.
Well, Cope, I'll tell you what, I have to admit, you're just as dumb as I am, because I've done the same damn thing. My wife was outside cutting a neighbor boy's hair, and she looks up and says, "Hey, Jim, look, look, look. Look up here in my upper yard, about 30 yards away, there's a blackbird. Nothing between me and him except a diversion ditch."
Yeah.
And I didn't know what to do, so I did the only thing I could think of, like a dumbass. I just started screaming and hollering and started running right at him.
Yeah.
He took off. He went up the woods. I think he made that 200 yards in about three steps. Oh, my God.
This was so funny. That was
To see him roll over a fence like that.
Yeah, he hit that top rail of that fence with his front legs, and he just landed right on his back and turned, kept rolling and kept right on going. It was hilarious.
Cute little story. Another story I have about Black Bear. We were coming back into Port Allegheny from Smithport, and Black Bear just happened to be on Route 6, and he just decided to take a dive. You should have seen him in the fur and everything just rippling. He dived right underneath the guardrail just like a rat. Oh, that was cute. But anyway, you got things to do. Go ahead.
No, we're just winding down here. As a matter of fact, what is this? It's Thursday. So I think Mother Earth won't be following me. Concretin. We're going to find out if Concretin. I saw him earlier. I've got to find out if he's still in the chat room here and see if he's ready before we start winding down. But we've got people out here ready for our meeting. So, hey, Tinker said he's got a third case of bear silliness here. Camping in boundary waters. Chased him out of the camp the same way. So, but the point I was making there was the bears typically are more scared of you than you are of them. They will go way out of their way not to have an encounter.
I agree.
If they do, they will kill you dead.
Yes, sir.
Very strong. I have seen grizzly bears do some astounding things. Absolutely amazing. Can't believe that a flesh and blood animal can have that kind of power.
It's mm-hmm.
just astounding. If they get a hold of you, unless they're just playing with you, you have no chance. Dead all you want to.
It's my understanding that they can literally knock the head off of a horse if they get it just right.
They say that when we lived in Idaho, they said that there was a mule over there that they said
got beheaded by a grizzly bear.
I haven't seen it myself.
Well, that would take a SWAT like nobody's business.
But I did see one rip the top off of a Ford Ranger one time, just like it was a can of sardines, just peeled it off because there was dog food and stuff locked up in the cab,
mm-hmm.
sitting at the trailhead right outside of Cody, Wyoming. And they'll grab hold of a deer or a goat, you know, I mean, not a goat, but a bighorn sheep or something, and just climb up a damn hill that I can't climb, period.
With it in their jaws.
And carrying a 200-pound deer with them.
Mm-hmm.
There's something else. They got those bear boxes up there at all the campgrounds around Cody. Well, all over around Yellowstone, they have these big steel boxes in there, and they're galvanized, probably 14 inches, maybe square, something like that,
mm-hmm.
and probably 4 foot long,
five,
and they've got, I think it's either 3 or 4 inch pipe in two places in the ground, concreted in the ground. And that's where you're supposed to put your food and what, where you're camping out there to keep them from, to discourage them from getting into your tent, your camp, your camper, whatever.
They go after the food.
Yeah. And Edge of the Woods just dropped in here. Edge of the Woods has the new medical show on Sunday night for you guys so inclined. Absolutely wonderful information, life-saving information. Don't miss that. Sunday night, 5:00 Mountain Time. All right, Concretin, if you're ready, buddy, I'm gonna ease on out of here. We'll see you all tomorrow afternoon. With the we're gonna be taking a long break before we do the night shoot, so I'll be in here in time for the oldies show. So let me get our break going here. Jim, thanks for being with me. This is fun. We might. You like old country music, don't you?
A little bit.
Hmm.
I actually know who Charlie Pride is. Somebody's played a song today, and it's like, I forget, he was singing Kalijah or something like that, and they didn't know who he was. They were, was like, that's Charlie Pride. I recognize his voice. Two notes into the song, and I recognize the guy's voice.
All right, Concrete, and you got 2 minutes from right now. We'll see you all tomorrow. Jim, thanks for joining us.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me.
Bye-bye.
This has been The Shooting Bench with Cope Reynolds of Southwest Shooting Authority.